Living on Purpose, Lynn, with number 10 in a series of conversations with John Heaney. Right away when I met you, John, a couple of years ago, I was aware that you had a real fascination with gramophones. And I don't know, fascination is probably obsession, more like. What is that all about? How did that start? Tell us your first encounter.
Well, the love of life and the adventure. When I was young, we went down to Washington, D.C. My mother's family was American, and she had relatives in Washington, D.C. who were quite well-placed, and we went to a cocktail party. And I started this engaging conversation with an elderly woman who we just got along like a house on fire, and it was really cool. And she said, "What are you doing tomorrow?" And I said, "I don't know. We just got here, and it's Washington. There's plenty to see and so forth." And she said, "Well, how'd you like to have lunch?" And I was so taken by the engagement that we were in that I said, sure. And only later that evening did I learn that she was the curator of musical instruments at the Smithsonian Institution. So off I went to have lunch with her the next morning. And because she, you know, had the run of the place, she took me into, as the case with the Smithsonian, lots of storage. Most museums are only showing 5-10% of their holdings. And she took me into the holding space for the musical collection, where I saw some fascinating things, including player pianos. And you know how a player piano works automatically. And there were actually player orchestras that actually played the same way too. And then all these gramophones of different shapes. And I love history. I'm drawn to history and the story of things, and I was fascinated. And this never left me. And when I went to Carleton University, I had my own show in there on their FM station for 2 years about the early pioneer days of the recording industry. I got to know Edward Moog, who in that sphere appreciated that the Canadian influence on the early recording industry, all the way to the famous Nipper the Dog and his master's voice, is Canadian. Has a Canadian connection. And so he, as a centennial project for which he received the Order of Canada, created an audio history sector at the at Library and Archives Canada. And he helped me with my show. And then I didn't actually own a machine till much later. And I'm up to about 20. My oldest is around 1890 and my youngest is 1928. Almost every machine I have came to me in a ladies and gentlemen crowd way of absolutely impossible interconnection, plus the records and the cylinders. And one of my machines has been featured in a movie. So it just, and people. I mean, I sit still, and the emails and the phone calls, I was here or this, or my uncle has a neighbor who has a barn who has a machine. and people ask, is it a past life? Is it spirit? Is it this? I think part of it is that it is multidimensional. That when you're listening to a bunch of guys who got together in 1890 to stand before a horn and be recorded, and the cylinder in your hand was the cylinder on their machine because they didn't have the capacity to reproduce. Right.
Wow.
And you're listening to their voices, and they sound so much like us. There's no difference. So these guys didn't know about the First World War, the Second World War, the Holocaust, cell phones, whatever, and so forth. And they're just coming through the ages. And so this folds into a multidimensional aspect of history and what it is like to be alive.
Well, that makes sense that you're connected with gramophones.
I'll have to play you one.
Living on Purpose, Lynn, with number 11 in a series of conversations with John Heaney. You just mentioned cell phones, and that is something, John, that I'm curious about your thoughts, because what did people do before they were constantly looking at these things and putting them to their ears and, you know, like, what has happened? How do you interpret this form of interconnectivity?
Like I have said before, humans are the only species who can do absolutely anything they want, even though they shouldn't. So the wonder, the playfulness of people, oh, I wonder what'll happen if I put this and this together. And sometimes you get an explosion and kill yourself because it's the wrong chemicals. But we're creating things. And then you create one thing which creates to another thing. And we were talking about my gramophone collection, which people joke about, right? Because I take sometimes one of my gramophones to a speaking engagement that I have. And I joke that I have to upgrade my audiovisual equipment. And I have done that. And playing the voices across the ages and saying to the people in the room, you know, these are your brothers and sisters speaking to you. So in the development, so again, gramophone, in a sense, begot radio, which begot TV, which we just keep on going. And then somebody said, oh, we can do this. Then we can do wireless. And then we can, then your oven can tell you by way of your cell phone if your furnace is behaving, that can tell you whether or not your cat needs to be fed. And so it just gets, it's crazy. And what it is doing, what I'm noticing in my practice, is this constant buzz, especially, you know, the young people, is creating a vibration among people, because we do vibrate. In the law of physics, human beings vibrate, and we cause vibration to happen, and we are affected by other vibration. Yes, I'm going to put it in quotation marks, it is bringing us closer together, but not necessarily a good thing, because you can get instant news about the middle of China, and you can, you know, you can get onto social media for social change and protest and so on and so forth. So, you know, I go all the way back to what is relaxation, really. And I do have an element of traffic in my practice of people coming to me specifically about this point.
And what do you tell them?
I put on a gramophone.
Relax.
Relax. Yes, relax, relax. Because again, relaxation is, just because your next door neighbor's doing it doesn't mean you need to do it.
There's a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so this is about loving yourself too. We're getting back to that wonderful central point.
Yeah, and not just the lovable parts.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
Well, you know, I often notice when people are like in Toronto or in Ottawa, they're lined up waiting for the streetcar or the bus or whatever, and everybody's either got little buds in, or they're looking at their phone, or they're talking on their phone, or there's something, some kind of connection going on. They're not just standing there. And one time I walked by a bunch of people, and there was one person just standing there, and I stood right in front of him, and I said, "Thank you for being unplugged." And he kind of went, you know, like he didn't really know what to say or what to think, and I just kept walking, you know.
Yeah.
And it was like somebody had to acknowledge that somebody was not plugged in.
Yes, yes.
And was actually okay.
Yes. And I move people from the angst, you know, because people get big about our culture. Like, how do we stop culture doing this? And how do we stop the whatever? And how do we... So we worry about it, and people talk about that too. And I said, well, yeah, that sounds like a lot of work. But what if you agreed that you also vibrate? And you basically sit there and go, ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of all vibrating life, so there you have included dandelions and hummingbirds and sperm whales and everybody else. Right? Watch what happens as I relax and I send out a signal that tells people that this is how I'm going to operate no matter what I'm doing. And I jokingly remind them that so far, there's no monthly fee, and you're not restricted to 5 thoughts a month. So basically, you start using your own system. And we love technology. And there actually is technology that can see the electromagnetic fields around people.
Mm-hmm.
But you're kind of saying, you know, again, ladies and gentlemen, as long as this is true, I'm not going to wait for the technology that can show me this every day. Maybe it's coming, right? and I'm going to agree that I send out a signal and I have a presence. So I'm going to agree that I'm going to have fun with it. And they just love it. Because then you've changed your place in the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not so much pressure pushing against resistance.
Yeah.
Lynn Thompson with John Heaney, number 12 in a series of conversations. Becoming the person you'd love to meet. This segues nicely from the concept of self-love, of loving oneself. Are you the person that you'd like to meet, John?
All the time.
All right.
What can I say? This is upset about people. I mean, we're a marvelous, creative, wondrous species. We, with a great sense of humility, we always refer to the possibility of other intelligent life in the universe. And I said, well, who said we were intelligent in the first place?
That's a pretty big assumption.
You know, we're self-aware, but we're not always intelligent. And there's a thing about our culture in the West about process and working on the self. And I think it started to emerge in the late 70s and grew in the 80s and 90s. And I think part of that comes from affluence, because if you've got plenty of time to navel gaze and ask questions about why are we here or being all you can be and that kind of thing, it means you're not in the third world having to walk 10 kilometers for your water and not having flush toilets and where's your next meal coming from. So I think that created a momentum that we're still actually not haven't weaned ourselves off of. So why? And of course, if life is so short, I mean, you can be a six-year-old with cancer in a children's hospital having never left the hospital. So there are all kinds of roles and ways and means and situations. So this thing about becoming the person you'd love to meet is kind of saying it's a rolling process. Rolling in your reputation, your place in the game, and really saying, how would I love to be treated? How would I love to be treated? If I were in a hospital, how would I love to be treated? If I had just lost a family member, if I was just unemployed, how would I love to be treated? And so when I'm in hospitals, for example, and I'm wandering down the ward hallway, I use my energy body, that is my imagination. I don't do it physically, but I lob little bundles of energy into everybody's room. Because if I were in a hospital bed, bored out of my mind, no visitors, whatever, and so forth, the energy kind of gets a little stale, right? So here goes this. And the interesting thing, as I've said, you just do this out of imagination, no permission, no belief, no faith, no nothing, and you just do it. And then what's going to happen is, around the corner, you're going to meet somebody who can see energy, who's going to report to you that you're doing it. I remember one time being in a retail store, and I knew the owner, and she knew what I did, and I came in, and she said, oh, John Heaney, this is really fantastic, and in my store, and the energy, da-da-da-da, whatever, and so forth. And we had a good time, and I left. And she called me that night, and was just totally blown away. And she said, you left the store, and then this other man, who I know is a seer and mystic, came into the store, closed the door, stood in the middle of the store, and said, John Heaney was just here. And I said, how'd you know? And he said, this is the way he travels and the way he carries himself and what he does to energy wherever he goes. Like, duh. So the phrase is not an order. It's not be the person you'd love to meet, because that's attempting a change of state. Right.
Right.
And, okay, I gotta be there. Yeah. Oh,
shape up.
Yes, right. And I forgot yesterday to be the person. So,
and now how am I ever going to make up for it?
Yeah, yes, I'll never be the person.
Well, that settles it.
And so you're taking all that away from the game, because you're always becoming. Because a child like, you know, a child is becoming all the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's really cool. And so becoming the person you'd love to meet in. So, I've been stuck in airports like everybody else, right? And so you just kind of sit there and you say, ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of all stuck people in airports. watch what happens to my energy as I apply my my aura to have a good time here, to relax, and I can get some work done, etc. But at the same time, the energy around me is calming. So I'm calming my space so other people can be calm, so other people... Right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're taking care of this kind of troublesome part of our being that always wants to do something. But we've got to do something. But I've got to do something. And trying to quiet that little piece is really, really difficult. So now you're saying, okay, that part of me is going to be doing some doing with minimal effort and maximum benefit. And so you can take that beingness anywhere to any... And then what's the fun for me is the reporting back from people on other continents and in other situations, saying I know a fellow in Europe, and he was traveling with 20 somethings through Europe, etc., meeting all kinds of people all over the continent, and somebody said to him, I've been wanting to ask you this for a long time. There's something about your presence. You're peaceful, you're up, you're gentle, you're quiet, you're centered. Like, how do you do it? And he said to me, and this fellow said to me, John, I remembered your line, and I just said to this group of people, I'm becoming the person I'd love to meet. And they all went quiet, and we stayed on the topic all evening.
Nice. Number 13 in a series of conversations with John Heaney. John, where did you come from?
And where am I going next?
Yes.
I was just a little glint in God's eye.
And then look what happened.
And look what happened. Well, you know, I've always had this life of... puzzling things. Sometimes people refer to my arrival as an indication of my impatience. I was born weighing half a pound and lived in the Montreal General for about my first year, as I say, trying to put things together. And what else can you do in an incubator for a year but to plan what you're going to do when you get out?
Oh boy.
And so I emerged with some neurological anomalies, not too difficult, and I just kind of said, well, I'm not going to be an NHL hockey star as a result, and just kind of kept going. And then the next thing that happened to me is when I was about, I think it was about four, the boy next door had a what was called an air rifle, which you don't see very often anymore. So it's not a BB gun, there's no projectile.
Right.
But you cock the rifle and the force of the air makes the noise of the shooting, right? And so he basically decided that he was going to cock his air rifle, snuck up behind me, stuck it in my left ear and pulled the trigger.
Whoa.
And it was only decades later that I learned that my sister witnessed it. And grabbed the gun and went after him, trying to do the same to him. Now, this was in the early 60s. And in another time, I would have been rushed to the hospital and stuff
yeah.
like that. But this was the, you know, pick him up and brush him off type of thing. And I explained to people that in wartime, if you're in a tank and a shell goes off next to your tank, this can kill all the crew members. Solely because of the vibration in the metal container.
Wow.
Right? Your neurology is shot. There are no marks on the bodies. In a submarine with a depth charge, it's the same thing. Hmm. If the depth charge goes off, etc., wow. it's the reverberation. So this is what happened to my ear and my neurology. And so I kept on going. And then I was in the shower one morning at the age of 35, and a shock went through my brain, and I lost all my functions. Walking, speaking, being able to pick up objects. And I was convulsing dozens of times a day. And after, you know, 2 years of tests and things, they basically said, well, we don't know how you lived this long anyway. your neurology and brain have been compensating for everything. Your system has busted, and we don't know how to put it back together. So I went through the medical system that didn't have answers, and then out the other side, and then I went through the alternative sector and out the other side, because in my journey, I was having to put things together. Teams and what about this and this, and not so much out of desperation, but almost curiosity. And my place in the game changed because I said to life, to the atmosphere, ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of all people with cerebral palsy, ataxia, aphasia, and dystonia, watch what happens as we put a team together to do this. Because I realized that the basis of this would help, as in, as I say, becoming the person you'd love to meet. Mm-hmm. This would help everybody with strokes and neurological conditions and so on and so forth. So then the flavor of the journey starts changing. People started showing up from all walks of life, all over the world. I know somebody who knows somebody, or somebody wants to talk to you, etc. And so this, as my journey continued, and I thought I was putting myself back together again. And I wrote an autobiography called The Thunder Within. Because a friend of mine said, you've got all this lightning going on in your body, but where's the thunder? So this is how it developed. And then to my surprise, my phone started ringing about people asking me to help them. It wasn't about not being emotionally prepared, but I just wasn't that's weird. And they said, well, my husband's had a stroke, or my kid has autism, or this or that or whatever. And then the stories got bigger and bigger and bigger. And then that was the launch of my practice.
That's quite a snapshot. Number 14 in the ongoing series of conversations with John Heaney. And you've been mentioning and giving brief examples of this ladies and gentlemen incantation. Or intonement, or I don't know.
Declaration.
Can you tell us a bit more about it first, and then give us a doozer?
People always ask me for doozers. It's like working for my supper. Yeah. It's a very powerful phrase, because it's three words only. And you'll notice as I make the list how this is true. It's a declaration. It's an announcement. It's saying, come on over here. It's saying something's about to happen. It's saying I have influence. It's saying I am being seen and heard. It's saying there's another audience I don't necessarily have to really understand is present that is present. The ladies and gentlemen is polite. It's inclusive. And it's kind of saying, unless you really want to prove to me you're an idiot, I will accept that you're not, you know. You're basically saying, come one, come all, and I will treat you all the same way because I love myself, which is I want to save myself time and effort and focus and attention and being hypervigilant and all that kind of stuff. And the second part of the phrase is on behalf of, because we try to get out of situations and scrapes. And we don't like them and we try to avoid them, but they happen. So when you're saying to your brothers and sisters around the globe, in the middle of China, in the middle of Russia, in the middle of Australia, these people may never have heard the English language, they may don't even know where Canada is, etc., etc., but if you've come down with cancer and they've come down with cancer, they're in the same boat. And so now you're changing your circumstance from a personal crisis to a service. And that switches the entire atmosphere around the entire game instantly. So then the third part of the phrase, which people find the most difficult at the beginning, it calls upon you to be creative. Oops! Yeah. Where's the manual? What's the phrase? Where do it is? Who did he say? What did he say? What did he...
Does this work?
Yes, and this is going back to your God connection of God creating us in His image, which we are tiny little creators, right? Mm-hmm. And we don't. Our society doesn't cause that aspect to blossom very much. It is in school, you know, rote and how to do things and so forth. So here's one from an example. A woman I know whose father had to go into surgery, and it was quite dangerous and so forth, and she was in a fret. And I said to her, no, it's okay. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of all people who have family members going into surgery, watch what happens as we set an example of how easy it is to relax the situation to such a degree that my own relaxation is felt by my father. So he starts to relax, and we can go forward into the operating room even before the operation starts and relax the atmosphere there. But I have a really cool idea working with crowds. I'd like to demonstrate how the crowds in the operating room assist the surgeon to have a good time as he's doing this, to show how easy it is to do this operation. And she did that. And it all worked like a charm. And I've actually had a case where a surgeon told a patient who used this that for some reason during the operation something changed, and he got an aha moment, and he had a brilliant idea, and he changed the way he did something. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Here's a doozy for you.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, John Heaney and Lynn Thompson have been sharing by the magic of broadcasting. Watch what happens as the energy of this series we've been putting together sends an energy through the speakers of any device to show how easy it is to share with our listeners and expand the knowingness of what we're talking about in easy and fun ways. So nobody has to get it. Everybody has to just relax and enjoy. Go and tell others you've been lucky enough to listen to us, and as a result, we'll have fun putting together more of these chats. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, John Heaney. Thank you, crowds.